and the equipment is active. It's probably just interference from the hills.
I can get us there in no time, Nathan said. But we need to move.
Hayden nodded.
Jackson, Ivanov, get these people to safety. Miss Columbo, I'm very sorry about Josias. I'll get to the bottom of this, I promise.
Thank you, Sheriff.
Hayden turned to Nathan.
Let's go.
53. Isaac. Isaac sat in the small mess at the rear of the Capricorn. A plate rested on the table in front of him, a brown block of flavored protein resting on the plate. He looked up as Rico approached the table with a plate of her own.
Mind if I join you?
She asked, smiling down at him.
Be my guest, Isaac replied, motioning to one of the chairs.
Rico sat, taking her fork and digging into the meal. She took a huge bite, chewed and swallowed before looking at Isaac again.
Not hungry?
She asked, pointing her fork at his plate.
Not particularly, he said grimly.
It's all catching up to you, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess.
He looked up at her, a small smile tipping up one corner of his mouth.
It's a lot to process.
Want to talk about it? I'm a pretty good listener.
You don't really want to hear me whine, do you?
His grin broadened.
Sure, why not? Go for it.
She took another bite and chewed.
Over 200 years in cold storage, he said with a deep sigh. How do you process something like that? Let alone waking up to find I'm nothing more than a curiosity to an ancient alien that wanted to enslave humankind, and that was after it murdered my son. I managed to help defeat that alien and was shipped to another planet thinking I was going to be treated like something important. Instead, I was locked away and had to be broken out of a golden prison only to come back to Earth in time to warn them about the coming of a massive alien starship and a new invasion.
Isaac paused.
All things considered, I feel great.
Rico smirked.
It can always be worse.
Did I mention that ever since we went through that twisted wormhole, I've had to use the bathroom every 30 minutes, and I can't bring myself to eat a single bite of anything?
To be honest, this isn't exactly a gourmet offering. Don't be too hard on yourself, Ike. This is only your second experience with space travel. The wormhole left me a little queasy for a couple of hours, too.
It isn't just the wormhole. It's the whole thing. Proxima, the Trust, the Organization, the Relia, and the Axon. The incoming ship. Earth is one planet in an entire universe of planets. A universe that has a hell of a lot more intelligent life in it than any of the scientists I ever knew believed. I get pissed when I think about how that truth should be wondrous, and instead it's a total disaster.
I hear you, Rico replied. I can't relate, but I empathize. I was made to be a centurion. Military life is the only life I know. Bred for war, as they say. That doesn't mean I never saw it. Life on the outside. Young couples, mothers with their babies. The whole normalcy thing. When I finally accepted my feelings for Austin, when I quit the CSF so we could be married, I thought it was my chance to be like everyone else. I thought I could live a happy, civilian life. Clones are sterile, but they're making clone infants now using the parents' DNA. I thought I would have a chance to be one of those mothers. But reality didn't let me. We don't get to choose the universe we live in. We only get to choose how we live in it.
I promised my wife I would never give up. Never stop fighting. But this, it's so much bigger than I ever imagined.
It's only as big as you let it be. Who you are, what you do, that doesn't change. Fight the small fight. Win the small battle. Work your way up or die proud that you tried. That's what I'm doing. We've been out here for over 200 years. We're still alive and kicking. I intend to keep it that way.
Isaac smiled.
I can see why your Bennett loved you. You have a lot of wisdom in there.
Rico returned the smile.
No, I'm just quoting an enlistment commercial I saw in the loop station once.
Bullshit.
They both laughed.
Isaac picked up his fork and stabbed the protein block. He took a piece off and brought it to his mouth, breathing in the smell of it. Reminds me of Thanksgiving dinner. Our Thanksgiving was moved to the day the first ship landed on Proxima, but yes, turkey, gravy, mashed potatoes, and cranberry sauce. I smell it all in there. He put it back on the plate. It was a good pep talk, but I still can't eat it. Rico took another bite. Don't stress about it, Sergeant. You'll get your appetite back. Stop trying so hard to force it.
Isaac dropped the fork. Yeah, you're right. What about you? How are you feeling?
A little nervous. A little excited. A little scared. The usual.
Are you getting used to having this Bennett around?
Still a work in progress, like your stomach. It would be easier if he didn't look exactly like Austin and have all of the same mannerisms, tone of voice, and pretty much everything else except his name. The mind knows the difference, but the heart wants to cling to the familiar.
I can't relate, but I empathize. If I were in your position, I don't know if I would be able to stop myself from falling in love again.
Rico leaned forward, lowering her voice.
I don't know if I can either. Hyrie might have thought he was buying my loyalty, but he's really messing with my head, and I don't like it.
I don't blame you. Not to minimize your feelings, but speaking of Hyrie, what do you think about whoever tried to have me killed?
I think they started with the wrong person. If what Abel says about the organization is true, they aren't going to take this line down. Proxima has been in a delicate balance since the beginning, a tense piece. This could be the action that pulls the settlement into an underground war. If it does, it isn't going to be pretty.
It seems like a pretty lousy time to fight amongst ourselves.
Yes, it does. It's almost as if the enemy is pulling the strings.
Do you think there are Relia on Proxima?
Relia, Axon, maybe both. How would we know?
There's not much we can do about it, is there? We're banished to Earth.
For now. Maybe not forever.
Do you think we'll live that long?
Forever? No. Long enough to go back to Proxima? I'm going to fight like hell to make it happen.
Then I will too. Deal?
Isaac put out his hand. Rico took it, clasping it tightly.
Deal.
Rico, Bennett said, entering the mess. Rico leaned back, looking at him with a forced coldness.
What is it? She replied.
We're nearing Earth orbit. Abel wants you to take us in.
Rico got to her feet. Isaac stood too.
I want to see this, Isaac said.
Then let's go.
54. Natalia. Natalia didn't get time to herself very often. There was always something to do, someone to take care of, time to spend with family or down in the lab, or going out into the streets to talk to the residents. There were always problems big and small, things that needed fixing, things to organize. And then there was Hayden. She had loved him for a long time. It had grown into a comfortable love, like an easy breeze on a warm day. Predictable and safe. And she liked it that way. She had proof he would do anything for her. He had already saved her from hopeless despair once, and she wanted more than anything to return the favor. It was the reason that when she found herself in her apartment with Halya asleep and Ginny at the movies, she didn't remain fixed for long. She went into Halya's room, picking up her daughter carefully enough she didn't wake her, and placed her gently in an old rolling crib she had restored. She covered the top of it with a thick material to keep it dark, and then headed out of the apartment, down the corridor to the lift, and from the lift out into the street. The movie theater was a couple of streets over, and she crossed them uneventfully, saying hello to the few people who hadn't gone to see the film. She still remembered the day they had finally found a bulb for the projector and built a wire to connect it to the old playing device. They had inherited a collection of movie discs from a storeroom of one of the buildings, and scavengers started bringing them more as word began to spread. Now they showed the films a few nights a week, the 500-seat theater always filled to bursting.
Governor Duke,
Deputy Salas said as she approached the entrance. Come to see the movie? Natalia smiled.
No, I was just hoping you could pass a message to Ginny for me. Just tell her to find me in the lab when the movie's over.
Yes, ma'am. You could have asked me over the comm. Natalia smiled.
I wanted some fresh air. How's everything looking?
Calm and quiet, just like we like it.
Good. Let's try to keep it that way. Good night, Harvey.
Good night, Governor Duke. I'll get that message to Ginny right away.
Natalia headed back to the pyramid, boarding the lift and taking it down to the subterranean garage that served as her research lab. Hayden had gone to find her in Ick, knowing how important it was for them to better understand the appearance of these new aliens and how Sergeant Caleb Card fit in. She knew how worried he was that accessing the collective would kill her the next time, instead of leaving her with the limp she was still dealing with. She needed to do whatever she could to minimize the danger. The lab was deserted. Most of the engineers had gone to see the movie, and the rest were probably already asleep, preparing for an early start in the morning. Her people were dedicated, almost as dedicated as she was. They were the reason Sanisco ran as well as it did. So much of everything was over 2 centuries old. The electrical wires, the water pipes, even the reactors that fed power to the city. It was a minor miracle any of it held together at all, and another that they were able to keep it all running. Natalia rolled the carriage into the corner near the neutral interlink. Halia was fast asleep, cooing softly beneath the cover. Natalia walked over to the terminal connected to the link and sat down, flipping on the display. She tapped on the control pad, logging into the system, and going back to the readings from her first time using the device. From what Dr. Hess had told her, the cause of her near-death experience was an overload of input from the collective. A simple case of too much data flowing into her brain for her brain to handle. What she needed was a valve, a means to control the flow. In order to create one, she had to better understand precisely how the ICK functioned. It was challenging because she didn't have a real one to experiment with. Instead, she was left with the data captured by the computers during her use. Lutz had been working overtime on building simulations based on that data, and she wanted to check on them now to see if she could continue his work. She opened the source code, reading through his algorithms. She understood them for the most part, though there were a couple of secondary calculations she would need to quiz him about in the morning. The good news was that since the collective flowed into her mind through the interlink, a machine, it was reasonable to expect they could gain a measure of control over it. The only question was whether or not limiting the flow would leave the collective essentially useless to them. She played with the calculations for a while, bringing over a chalkboard and scribbling different ideas on it, erasing most of them after they didn't fit. Hayden thought she was the smartest person he knew, but she didn't see it that way. She made a lot of mistakes. Too many mistakes. He was the one out there saving lives every day. He was the one with the courage to face every challenge thrown at them head on. There were plenty of times she wanted it to all go away so she could focus on the family she had fought so hard to build. 2 hours passed in a blink. Natalia leaned back in her chair, staring at the code on the screen. She was missing something, but what? She glanced over at the carriage. Halia was still out cold. She slept like her father. Natalia smiled, but it faded quickly. Where was Hayden? She should have heard something from him by now. She tapped on her comm, speaking softly.
Fry, are you there?
She waited a few seconds. No reply.
Fry?
She looked down at the comm. The LED was red. Fry wasn't answering. He was on comms duty tonight. Maybe he went to use the bathroom. But her call would go through to him there. She stood up and walked over to the carriage. It had to be a malfunction in her comm. It wouldn't be the first time. She would walk it up to the office and swap it out with another. She wrapped her hands around the handle of the carriage, and then the power went out.
You have to be kidding me, Natalia said, staring straight ahead into the pitch black.
She tapped her comm a few times, the LED turning bright white, a mini flashlight that provided just enough light for her to see her surroundings. They had managed to go 3 months without a power outage. The timing was awful.
Come on, Hal. We need to see what happened to the lights.
She turned around, wheeling the carriage in front of her, freezing when she saw a ghost. 55. Hayden. Hayden followed Nathan up the ramp into the dropship, still carrying Bach. Hicks brought up the rear with the zombie-like Bryant. A group of soldiers waited at the top of the incline. Most looked ragged in their combat armor, their postures wilting, their eyes tired. All except one.
"You're Caleb Card," Hayden said, certain the only member of the team who didn't look like they needed a few days of sleep was the man he wanted to meet.
Caleb looked ready for action in his combat armor, physically fit and strong-jawed, with short brown hair and kind but serious eyes.
"Sheriff Duke, I take it," Caleb replied, looking down at Bach. "One of yours?"
Hayden nodded.
"Reaper got him. I want to bring him back to his family." "I understand. Walt, can you take the fallen and put him in storage with Dane's body?"
"Yes, Colonel," she replied, coming up next to Caleb and holding out her arms.
"He's pretty heavy," Hayden said. Walt smiled.
"I can manage. I'm stronger than I look."
Hayden passed Bach over to her and she carried him to the stairs at the back of the hold, vanishing up them a moment later.
"You lost one of yours too," Hayden said.
"3, Caleb replied.
"We were only able to recover Dane." "What happened?" "We were trying to re-equip from Tinker's weapons cache," Nathan said. "An other was waiting for us. It wanted to get into the cache too."
"How did you know where to find it?"
"Unknown. Pyro, everyone's aboard. Let's get this bird in the air."
"Roger, General. Good to hear your voice, Sheriff."
"Chandra, is that you?"
Hayden said.
"Paz," she replied.
"You're a pilot now." "A damn good one," Nathan said, closing the ramp as the dropship began to slowly rise.
"Thank you for the compliment, General," Pyro said.
"You've earned it."
"ETA to Sanisco is 18 minutes.
"Not bad," Hayden said.
He looked at Caleb again.
"It doesn't give us much time to chat."
"Nathan told me a bit about you on the way over," Caleb replied, putting out his hand. Hayden took it.
"It's an honor, Sheriff. I admire everything you've been trying to do."
"I'm just doing my job," Hayden replied.
"So am I," Caleb said.
"Sergeant Caleb Card, United States Space Force, formerly United States Marine Corps."
Hayden's eyes narrowed. "Another forgotten Marine?"
"Another," Caleb said.
"Sergeant Isaac Pine," Hayden said. "He was in stasis since the Trife invasion, up until a few months back. He helped me deal with a problem. He's on Proxima right now, being cured of a brain tumor." "What's your story?"
"I was on the Generation ship Deliverance. Went to sleep near Mars, woke up almost 50 light years away. Came back through an Axon portal."
"I assume that's the abridged version."
Caleb laughed.
"We only have time for brief introductions. I'll be happy to give you all the details later. Nathan tells me it was your wife I sensed reaching out through the collective."
"Apparently," Hayden said. "I'm away from home because I was looking for an ick to harvest so we could find you."
"An ick?"
"That's what we call the organ the Relia use to communicate through the collective. Natalia and our doctor figured out how to wire it up so we could use it. But one use kills the organ."
Caleb went silent, his eyes glazing over slightly.
"Caleb," Hayden said. His eyes came back into focus.
"Sorry. You need pheromones to feed the ick, as you call it."
"You mean fear."
"You're familiar with the hunger?"
"Too familiar.
That problem I mentioned? Its name was Shirath."
Caleb's eyes widened.
"You killed Shirath?"
"No. I sent him to the Axon homeworld as barter."
Caleb stared at him, dumbfounded.
"Sheriff, I admired you before I heard any of this. What you've done is bordering on miraculous. Tell that to the thousands of people Sharath killed before I neutralized him. There's nothing miraculous about it, Colonel.
You killed Sharath? Sergeant Walt asked as she came down the steps.
Sort of, Hayden said. How do you know this Sharath, Sarge? One of the other soldiers asked. Never mind, Nathan told the soldier. Sheriff, I think we should continue this discussion on the bridge. Caleb, can you show him up while I get out of this tin can? Walt, you too.
Yes, General. Caleb motioned to the stairs. This way, Sheriff.
Walt followed on their heels.
Hicks, wait here, Hayden said. Roger, Sheriff. I'll get to know the rest of our new friends.
Hayden had been on the craft before and was already familiar with the layout. The hatch opened as he and Caleb neared it. The two men entered.
Sheriff Duke,
Pyro said, looking back at him with a big smile. Hayden walked over to her and put his hand on her shoulder, squeezing it.
Chandra, you look better than you sound. I take it Nathan's treating you well?
No complaint, Sheriff. What happened to Gus's augment?
I knew you'd finally notice, Hayden said. It got ruined saving my life.
Just the way he would have wanted it.
Pause.
Hayden glanced up at the displays around the bridge. They were headed south toward Sanisco, hanging relatively low to the deck.
I'm sorry about Edenrise, Hayden said.
Me too, Pyro replied. But we'll avenge them, won't we, Sheriff?
We will. Sheriff, I know why General Stacker wanted us to speak in private, Caleb said. He wanted me to introduce you to Ishek. Ishek? The reason I was able to almost communicate with your wife on the Collective, and the reason those Reapers stopped short of killing you and your people. And Bryant? Yes, though I'm not sure you still need him now that you have us. Ishek's Aurelia, Hayden stated. Yes.
Caleb unclasped his combat armor, shrugging his arm out of it. Hayden noticed the moist black band around it immediately, but he didn't react. Like it or not, it wasn't the strangest thing he had seen lately.
I was captured by Aurelia. He tried to control me with Ishek, a creature like the Koran called an advocate. I turned the tables. How? That's a story for another time. It's important that you understand I'm in control, and I'm loyal to Earth. I went through a lot to get back here. Why did you come back? To deliver a message to Proxima. But Nathan tells me I need to be careful who I deliver it to. He's right. But I might be able to help you with that. My relationship with Proxima is less illegal than Nathan's. I would appreciate that, but we have a much bigger problem to handle first. The tentacle monsters. They're called Jaxcluth. They're Nyarlath's favorite creation. Nyarlath. I've heard that name before. One of the original Relia. One of the most powerful. She's on her way here to finish what her brother failed to finish. She's been trying to recruit me to the cause, Hayden said. Really? Interesting.
The door to the bridge slid open, and Nathan stepped in.
I see you showed him your little friend. Good.
Hayden looked at Ishek, and then Sergeant Walt. The other soldiers in the hold don't know about him.
But you do?
He took a step toward her.
You're also sporting a tattoo I've seen before.
Sharath's mark, Walt replied. I was a follower until he was taken from this world.
You're Koran infected?
Yes.
All of Sharath's Koran are supposed to be dead.
Who told you that?
Natalia had told him that, but he couldn't rule out that she had made a mistake. He looked back at Caleb.
Why is she still alive? She's probably sending everything we're saying back through the Collective.
She isn't, Caleb said. Ishek is keeping an eye on her.
I hate to say this, Caleb, but how do I know I can trust you? Between the Koran and the Axon, it's hard to know if anyone is who they say they are.
You can trust him, Nathan said. He saved thousands of lives in Edenrise.
I did my job, Caleb said. Like you're trying to do yours, Sheriff. We aren't enemies. I want us to be allies. We're all going to need as many of those as we can get. The Jaxcluth are emerging.
I can't argue that logic, Hayden said. If Eden Rise fell to the Jaxcluth, Sanisco will too. We need to start the evacuation before it's too late.
General,
Pyro said before anyone else could speak. Her tone drew Hayden's attention to the primary display.
Oh no, he said. What the hell is that? Caleb asked. Pyro, get us down there, both Hayden and Nathan said at the same time.
56. Caleb. Attention all hands, Pyro said into the comm. Prepare for emergency maneuvers. I repeat, prepare for emergency maneuvers. She looked back at Hayden. You might want to sit.
Sergeant Walt left the bridge, hurrying to the seats at the front. The general took his seat at the command console.
I've got it, Hayden replied, wrapping his augmented hands around the back of her seat.
Caleb stared at the dropship's primary display even as he hurried to the second pilot station and strapped himself in.
I'm not familiar with that humanoid creature.
Caleb had never seen anything like it before either, not even on Essex, the planet where he had taken the portal back to Earth. It was nearly 60 meters tall, with long, lean limbs and mottled, patchy skin, thinner in places to reveal the cord-like muscle beneath. Oversized arms and hands led to a narrow torso, which went up to a twisted nightmare of a head. Small eyes peered out from a deformed face above a mouth that was too large, the jaw hanging toward the base of the neck. The mouth was open, revealing row upon row of grinding teeth, all of them covered in dark stains of flesh and blood from whatever the thing liked to eat. It was naked and sexless, a giant of a thing. It was also under attack. 6 Jaxcluth surrounded it. 2 more were on its body, their tentacles wrapping around its limbs, the teeth at the end of the edge taking bites out of it. The creature looked like it was groaning, its blood spilling down its legs as it kicked out, catching one of the Jaxcluth and sending it rolling away. The alien recovered, bunching itself and then charging forward.
Goliath, Hayden said beside him. It looks like it already killed a few of them.
Caleb shifted his attention further out. There were 3 Jaxcluth nearby, their central masses crushed and motionless.
Is that one of the Hunger's monstrosities? He asked.
No, one of Proxima's. They made the Goliath to fight the Trife. It looks like it's doing okay against the Jaxcluth, but it could use some help. Nate, do you have any extra guns?
Rifles, Nathan replied. No revolvers. Sorry, Sheriff.
I'll make do, Hayden said. Pyro, take a run at the group on the ground, and then give us 20 seconds at slow speed to disembark.
Slow speed? Caleb asked.
I can take it, Hayden replied. Can you?
I think he just challenged us.
Caleb smiled.
He liked Sheriff Duke already. Affirmative.
Nathan, you with me? Hayden asked.
I don't know, Hayden. Maybe we should get back to Sanisco. The Jaxcluth are getting closer.
We can't just leave it, Pyro said. The poor thing needs help.
Hayden didn't respond right away. He was worried about Sanisco and his family, and he wanted to get back to them as soon as possible. At the same time, Pyro was right. They couldn't just leave it to be killed.
If we help the Goliath now, it'll help us later, he said. They aren't that smart, but they do remember.
But if you can get Sanisco on the comm, I'd be much obliged.
I'll try, Pyro replied.
Fine, Nathan said. Pyro, go ahead and make that run on the aliens and then give us enough time to get down there.
Roger, General. Hold on.
The dropship shuddered slightly as Pyro guided it into a hard turn, running parallel to the fight for a few seconds to get a better angle of attack. The Jaxcluth below weren't as large as the 2 they had struggled against in Eden Rise, most of them only 4 meters high. They clearly hadn't found as much to feed on as the others coming down from the north. Thanks to the Goliaths, it seems. The dropship dipped, plasma cannons unleashing fury as they swept down toward the field. The rounds dug into the dirt around the Jaxcluth before finding their moist flesh, burning deep into limbs. One of the shots scored a direct hit on the creature's main mass, and it writhed violently in response before becoming still. Caleb put his hand over the buckle to his restraints, ready to jump up the moment the G-forces eased.
They passed over the Jaxcluth at 100 meters, rushing past the Goliath's head as its eyes shifted to watch them. It swung a huge arm downward at the Jaxcluth, who managed to crawl away before the Goliath's hand smashed into the ground.
Go,
Pyro said, signaling them to make their move. Hayden was already headed for the door, almost faster than the hatch could open for him. Caleb hit the release for his belt and jumped up, taking the rear behind Nathan. The trio raced past the Liberators and Hicks, who hardly knew what was happening. They reacted instantly, getting up and following the group into the hold.
Sheriff, get the ramp, Nathan said, rushing to his armor and stepping into the machine. Caleb, guns.
Caleb went over to the crates they had brought on board from the bush, lifting open the top of one and grabbing the MR-12s inside. He passed one to Hayden as the sheriff returned from the ramp control, adding 3 bullet magazines and a grenade magazine.
What's going on?
Corporal Hotch asked.
Rescue mission, Hayden replied. Wait here.
I want to help.
We aren't touching down, Caleb said. You can't make the drop.
But he can?
I've got a pair of cyborg arms and a high pain tolerance, Hayden said.
I'm coming, Sergeant Walt said.
Sergeant, Caleb replied.
You need all the help you can get, Colonel.
Fine, you're in. Grab a rifle.
She can make the drop, but I can't,
Hotch said.
I appreciate your desire, Corporal, but I want you here, Caleb replied. That's an order.
Yes, Colonel.
Hotch wasn't happy. Caleb appreciated that, too.
General, better hurry, Pyro said. There's a Jaxcluth headed our way, and it's a big one.
Let's go,
Nathan said, stepping out of the machine. Caleb loaded the grenade magazine and the first of the bullet mags into his rifle. Hayden and Walt did the same, while Nathan grabbed his larger gun. Then, all 4 of them ran to the ramp. Caleb looked down as he reached it. They were only 5 meters above the grass, but still moving at nearly 100 kilometers per hour. He could hear the vectoring thrusters firing on either side of the craft, helping to keep it in the air at that speed. He didn't stop moving, jumping right before he reached the edge. The Jaxcluth was right there in front of him, about 100 meters away. The Goliath was to his right, still under siege from the other aliens. He tucked his shoulder as he hit the ground, rolling with the momentum. He hit hard enough to knock the air from his lungs, bouncing a couple of times before sliding to a stop. Caleb didn't waste any time on the ground, jumping up and spinning around. Hayden was on the ground nearby, slowly pulling himself back to his feet. Walt was close too, already up and ready. Nathan was the only one spared the crash landing. He floated to the ground on his armor's jets, landing closest to the Jaxcluth and already unleashing hell on it. His railgun made a whining sound as it unleashed its ammunition. It raised its tentacles to protect its central mass, trying to close on the general before it was reduced to jelly. Walt's fire joined Nathan's, and then Caleb added his. Hayden sat back on his knees, mouth open and trying to get his breath as he aimed his rifle and fired a single silver ball from the grenade launcher. It arced high into the air. Too high, it seemed to Caleb. But it came down a few seconds later, evading the Jaxcluth's tentacles and sticking to its center. Then it detonated. The Jaxcluth's central mass blew out in a mess of gore, the remaining limbs immediately falling still.
Who is this man?
Caleb didn't know much about Hayden yet, but from what he did know, he was glad Sheriff Duke was on their side. 57. Isaac. Isaac entered the bridge of the Capricorn right behind Rico, grabbing the navigator's seat as Spot rose from the pilot station to let Rico replace her. Abel was in her familiar place at the command station overseeing the activity. Isaac noticed the older woman had changed into a fitted formal uniform, though it wasn't a style he had seen before. A black jacket, black pants, and a dark gray shirt, all of it pressed and perfect. No hardware, no name tag. No decorations of any kind, save a single small ring embroidered over the chest in white thread. She wasn't about to meet with Sheriff Duke without looking like she carried some level of authority, even if it was loosely limited to the people on board.
Sergeant Pine, Abel said. Have you seen Earth from this angle before?
Isaac looked up at the displays. The planet was dead ahead, white, blue, and green. Beautiful. And deadly.
I got a quick look on the way out, Isaac replied, sitting and strapping in. This is better.
It's my first time, Abel said. I've never been outside the Proxima system before. A few trips to the mining rigs, but otherwise I've stuck to Praetan.
And you volunteered for this mission? Abel laughed.
Who says I volunteered? But yeah, somebody had to do it.
Rico started tapping on the controls.
Why do you ask me to bring us in? I thought it was fitting. Plus, long-range sensors are freaking out, and I don't know if that's because they're old and broken or because there's something seriously messy going on down there.
Isaac looked at the display on the station in front of him. It was showing the same sensor data as the other two stations. Small red marks covered the planet as if it had measles. What does it mean? He asked.
The marks are unidentified masses, Rico replied, based on prior topographical scans of the surface.
Unidentified masses? Like large groups of trife?
No. The system's algorithms adjust for life forms. They filter out anything that falls within a reasonable variance. It can't be anything living. It would have to be huge to show up on the scan.
From what I've experienced, I don't think we should rule anything out. Rico looked over at him.
Let's really hope it's nothing alive. It isn't localized to the Pacific Northwest. Hell, it isn't even localized to the United States. There are marks across the entire planet. It can't be anything alive, Abel said. The Relia ship isn't here. Where would it have come from?
Good point, Isaac replied. But if it isn't alive, then what is it?
We're going to find out, Rico said. There's a mark almost directly on top of our target.
The dropship continued toward the planet. Rico started slowing them down as they closed on the atmosphere, expertly guiding the Capricorn toward the surface.
Entering atmosphere in 5, 4, 3. What the?
Rico cut off her countdown as her display suddenly flashed in warning. Isaac had seen it first out of the corner of his eye on the starboard display. At first, it appeared to be a small asteroid, a dark, rocky, asymmetrical mass. But then the crumpled rock unfolded, revealing an array of long tentacles spreading out from a round mouth, the sudden alien creature shooting toward them on a direct collision course, already too close to avoid. Shit! Rico cursed, tempted to take evasive maneuvers and realizing she was out of time. The creature hit an instant later, the dropship shaking slightly as a number of the starboard video feeds went dark, suffocated by the creature's many limbs.
Keep her steady, Abel said, her voice remaining calm and commanding. Bring us into the thermosphere. We'll see how much that bitch likes the heat.
Rico kept the dropship steady, continuing the drop. Isaac's eyes remained glued to the displays. One of them was directly to the side of the alien's head in full view of what seemed to be a thousand tiny eyes running along the side of its face.
What's it doing?
Rico asked, keeping her eyes glued to the primary display and watching her approach.
It seems like it's hanging on for the ride, Isaac replied.
He spoke too soon. One of the tentacles drew back and then snapped forward, pounding the side of the craft. A second one repeated the motion.
Not hanging on for the ride, Rico said. Abel, we need to abort the approach.
Negative. We have no way to get that thing off the ship. Either it burns up on approach or we smash it into the ground. Great choices, Isaac said. Rico's eyes narrowed, her focus on bringing them in. They hit the thermosphere, the hull beginning to heat up on entry. The Relia didn't burn up. Instead, its delicate tentacles shrank back into the harder material that had disguised it, shrinking its profile, but keeping it attached to the dropship like a giant barnacle.
It isn't going to burn, he said.
Damn it, Rico replied.
Get the hell off us!
They continued to drop, through the thermosphere and beneath the outer layers. The Relia reacted to the cold, expanding back out of its shell and beginning to pound the craft again. Now that they were within the pull of gravity, each strike threatened to send the ship spiraling out of control.
We have to do something, Rico shouted, fighting to keep the Capricorn flying straight.
They were still descending sharply, vectoring for the target. The creature moved, and the entire dropship shook violently, yanking Isaac hard against his restraints. Warning tones sounded on the bridge, the display in front of him showing the damage.
"I think we just lost one of the thrusters," he said.
"What is this thing?" Abel said. "It's like it was just waiting out there for us."
"Maybe it was."
"How is that possible?"
"Someone tried to stop us from leaving Proxima. What if they were Relia?"
Rico shot a look over at him. He didn't want that to be true either, but what if it were?
"Hyrie can take care of himself," Abel said. "So can the organization. Our mission is Earth."
"Our mission is getting to the surface alive," Rico said. The dropship shook again. Another warning tone sounded.
"Damage to the stabilizers," Abel said. "Get us on the ground. I'm doing my—"
Rico's voice cut off. Isaac saw why. They had broken through a high level of clouds, the ground becoming visible below. Dozens of dark creatures were moving across the landscape from every direction but west, where the Pacific Ocean met the coast.
"There's your mark," Isaac said, barely able to breathe, let alone speak.
He was there during the first invasion when the Trife had swarmed the cities by the thousands. There were a lot fewer of whatever the dark blobs were, but they were bigger. A lot bigger.
"This can't be happening," Abel said. "There's Sanisco," Rico said, the primary display marking the city with an outline.
There were already creatures at the outskirts, smoke rising from just beyond the walls. The aliens were moving through the outer city, smashing large tentacles into the buildings around them.
"Have you ever seen those things before?" Isaac asked, glancing back at Abel.
"No," she replied, her face white. "I wish I wasn't seeing them now."
A third warning tone sounded. The ship shuddered again and started to drop more rapidly.
"There goes the other thruster," Rico said. "We've got vectoring nozzles only." "All hands," Abel said. "Brace for emergency impact. I repeat, brace for emergency impact."
The dropship turned slightly, away from the city and toward the wide highway to the south, Rico somehow managing to steer with no main thrust. The dropship wasn't designed to glide, making the effort even more impressive.
"This is it. Hold on."
Isaac was thrown forward into his restraints as Rico fired the retro thrusters, the backward force slowing the craft's momentum in a matter of seconds. That slowdown led to further loss of flight control, the Capricorn's nose dipping as a result. Rico used the vectoring thrusters to push the front back up, leading with the tail as they closed to 100 meters. 50. 20. 10.
"Eat dirt, you bitch," Rico cursed, triggering the portside thrusters and throwing the dropship onto its side.
It fell the last 5 meters, catching the hull and the Relia on the top of a building and smashing through, bouncing off slightly and then coming down hard on the pavement. Isaac held onto his restraints, closing his eyes as they slid along the ground, smashing through abandoned wrecks before hitting something hard enough to launch themselves back into the air. They landed upside down. The craft spun multiple times, shoving him around before finally coming to a stop. Isaac opened his eyes, looking over at Rico. She was looking back at him, hanging upside down in her seat. They both glanced back at Abel. She was alive too, a dark scowl on her face.
"Let's haul ass," she said. "We're sitting ducks out here."
Isaac released his restraints, holding them and using them to flip himself over and drop. Rico and Abel did the same. Something hit them again, shaking the ship violently enough to knock them all from their feet. Isaac looked back at the displays. Only one was still active, cracked as it was. He could see the Relia creature hovering over it, preparing to hit it again.
"I think we should stay inside," he suggested. "Wait for it to decide we're dead."
"What if it never decides we're dead?" Abel asked.
"If we go out there, it'll kill us, and if it doesn't, they will."
Isaac pointed to the background where two of the other tentacled creatures were approaching. Abel sighed.
"I knew this wasn't going to be easy, but this is ridiculous. Better find somewhere to secure yourself. It's going to be a long day."
58. Hayden. Hayden didn't waste time admiring his shot.
He ran past the Jaxcluth, racing to get into the real fight.
Nice shot, Sheriff, Caleb said, coming up beside him, running as if it was no effort at all. Damn show-off.
The Goliath was ahead of them, nearly half a click away. It had managed to kill another Relia, but it was suffering under the enemy's assault. Three of the tentacled creatures were on its body, and one was climbing toward its face, positioned on its back where it couldn't reach it with its hand.
Caleb, Hayden shouted. Tell Nathan we need to get those things off the Goliath's back.
He wasn't wearing combat armor and had no helmet comm with which to contact the general himself, and he didn't dare risk his glasses on the drop. They were the second pair Natalia had made him, and she would kill him if he lost them again so soon.
Roger that, Caleb replied. General, Hayden says we need to take down the Jaxcluth on the Goliath's back.
On it, Nathan said.
He surged forward in his powered armor, taking leaping steps forward and using his thrusters to speed up his advance. He cleared the dead Jaxcluth and started shooting again, his rounds hitting one of the creatures on the ground. Hayden understood why. If the Goliath realized they were trying to help, it might turn around to give them a better shot at the Relia climbing it. He took a wider vector to get an angle on the enemy coming side by side with Sergeant Walt. If the sergeant was a Koron, she was a traitor to her kind. Hayden hadn't thought that was even possible, but here she was, adding her fire to his. The assault got the attention of two Jaxcluth. It also got the attention of the Goliath. It looked past the creatures at them, howling loudly as though asking for their help. It raised a large leg, bringing it down to crush the Jaxcluth, which moved sideways to avoid the gargantuan foot. The Goliath howled again in frustration.
Hang on! We're coming!
Hayden shouted up at the Goliath, not sure the biological construct understood him at all. He switched bullets for another grenade, launching it across the field at the closest Jaxcluth. It was ready for the attack, and it caught the projectile, bending its tentacle to fling it back. Hayden squeezed the trigger again, sending the detonation signal. The grenade exploded, taking the creature's limb with it. It wasn't a very effective attack, but it did prove to the Goliath they shared a common enemy. The giant howled again, turning sideways and giving them a better angle on the creature's biting into its back. Nathan slowed to take better aim at the creature riding the Goliath's shoulder, not letting the Jaxcluth heading for him distract him. He opened fire, his rounds crossing a quarter kilometer and pounding the Jaxcluth, which seemed to dig in more tightly in response. Hayden switched his aim, going for the monster heading for Nathan. He squeezed off a few rounds and then dropped the empty magazine, grabbing another and snapping it in without breaking stride. Sergeant Walt pulled ahead of him, but they were both tailing well behind Caleb. Card shot as he ran, one round at a time, each bullet carefully placed to bypass the Relia's undulating tentacles. He hit the central mass, taking out one eye, then another, and another. Impressive shooting. Hayden followed his lead, conserving ammunition to wait for the best shot. It took him three rounds to hit the first eye, and then he took out three more in rapid succession. The Jaxcluth was almost on top of Nathan before the general could take evasive action. He leaped forward and rose on his thrusters. The Relia's tentacles stretched out to reach for him, one of them managing to grab his leg. It dragged him hard to the ground, slamming him into the dirt. Plasma bolts sizzled from the sky, hitting the creature along its central mass. It groaned as it tried to lift Nathan into the air to bring him to its mouth. Nathan was still clinging to his rifle. He fired it upside down, launching a grenade into the Jaxcluth's maw. The creature's face exploded, and Nathan fell back to the earth. Pyro continued strafing across the field, buying them time. Hayden switched his attention to the creatures on the Goliath, sending bullets into the one on its back, which had almost reached the giant's face. Caleb, Walt, and Nathan joined him a moment later, sending so much metal into the Jaxcluth it struggled to hold on. The Goliath roared, turning its back on them to let them shoot. Its hand swept down, catching one of the creatures and holding it fast, lifting it toward its mouth. The Jaxcluth struggled in its grasp, writhing violently as the Goliath brought its hand to its face, releasing the creature into its huge maw, its rows of teeth quickly taking the Jaxcluth in and devouring it. Hayden kept his attention on the creature struggling to remain on the Goliath's back. A few more rounds, and it was destined to fall. He dropped his second empty magazine, loading the third, still advancing.
They were only 20 meters from the Goliath now, shooting almost straight up at its back. He caught sight of the two Jaxcloth attacking the Goliath's legs. They were pulling themselves off the giant, preparing to intercept them.
"Caleb!"
Hayden shouted over the roar of gunfire, getting the Marine's attention. He saw the Jaxcloth too, immediately shifting his aim. The two Relia broke free and charged. They were already so close they would be on them in seconds. One last round poured from Nathan's gun, hitting their primary target. It was the winning shot, and the Jaxcloth finally succumbed, the last of its tentacles breaking free of the Goliath's back. Its body tumbled to the earth while Nathan slapped his depleted gun to his back and pivoted to face the oncoming creatures. Caleb's gun went dry too, and he switched to grenades, firing ball after ball into the rapidly approaching creatures. The rounds hit and detonated, taking a tentacle with each shot. It wasn't nearly enough. Hayden fired furiously, emptying his rifle in seconds and following Caleb's lead, dumping grenades into the Jaxcloth. But the Relia had adapted to the attack, and they caught the balls, smothering them and sacrificing a limb to continue their assault. They were nearly out of ammo, and the two Jaxcloth remained. Hayden found the dropship descending toward them, about to make another run. Pyro was too late. The Jaxcloth rose on their tentacles, stretching out above them and preparing to pounce. Hayden closed his right hand into a fist, the axon material expanding into a pair of claws. He wasn't going down without a fight.
"Stop!"
The Jaxcloth froze as if they had just hit an invisible wall, their tentacles seizing and holding them in the upright position. A moment later, the Goliath's massive hand swept around, slamming into the two creatures and holding them tight. Hayden expected the Goliath to bring the Relia to its mouth to eat them, but instead it clapped its two hands together, smashing both like a pair of annoying insects. It howled softly, looking down at Hayden and the others. Its mouth spread in a grotesque smile. Then it turned south, in the direction of Sinisco, and started walking away. Hayden's attention turned to Caleb. The Marine and his Relia symbiote had frozen the Reapers, and now he had done the same to the Jaxcloth. Or had he? Caleb had turned to face Sergeant Walt, his look of shock, anger, and fear immediately signaling that he hadn't issued the command. Sergeant Walt had. She stared back at him, their eyes locked in an inhuman battle of wills. Nathan noticed it too, and began retreating toward Hayden. The dropship landed a short distance away. Neither Walt or Caleb made a sound, but Hayden could almost sense the pressure between them as if it were a physical thing. Whatever was happening was something he didn't understand. Whatever was happening, it ended a moment later. At the same instant, both Caleb and Walt stiffened as if they were marionettes. Then they both collapsed as if someone had cut the strings. What the hell?
"Hayden," Nathan said. "We need to go, now."
Hayden glanced at his friend.
"What is it?"
He asked the question, but he already knew what it was. The answer was in Nathan's voice. It was in Pyro's quick landing. It was even in the Goliath's sudden movement south. Hayden turned his head to track the giant, his pulse quickening as he saw the truth he wanted more than anything to deny rising in the distance in pillars of smoke. Sinisco was under attack. 59. Natalia.
"Natalia," Ghost said. "It's been a long time."
Natalia's heart pounded, her entire body shivering with sudden fear. Ghost. The man who had once taken her from Hayden, who had convinced her that her husband was dead and she was alone in the universe. In her despair, in her submission, she had slept with him, hoping that it would ensure his loyalty to her over his father, the warlord, king, the tyrant who had run Sinisco before Hayden killed both father and son. She had been stupid and naive. It was all a game to Ghost. Everything was a game to him. A challenge. That's what the Trife had done to Earth in his mind. Turned it into a competition. He couldn't be here. He had been dead for over a year. In her heart, she knew this wasn't real. A hallucination. An axon. But in her mind, she couldn't sense that.
She couldn't come to terms with it. In her head, he was real, tangible, present, and therefore, lethal. Halya started crying.
Did you miss me? Ghost asked, stepping toward the carriage. Can I see her?
No, Natalia replied.
Yes.
She opened the cover. Halya stopped crying.
What do you want?
Natalia asked. Ghost looked past her to the interlink.
Thousands of years of war can come to a quick end with that device.
How?
Imagine sending a virus through the collective. Imagine killing every single Relia in the universe with one push of a button.
Ghost stepped closer to Natalia.
But I don't need to tell you that. You know what it can do. It isn't possible. The networks are firewalled. There's one that's open to all of them, isn't there?
Natalia didn't speak the answer, but it floated across her terrified mind. Shub-Nagu. The Archiver. The one who sees.
I've missed you, Nat,
Ghost said. He reached out for her, putting his hand on her shoulder. He was warm. And as he drew in close, his familiar scent slipped into her nose.
Does Hayden know the truth?
What do you mean? Natalia asked softly.
You know what I mean. About our little one. She isn't yours.
No?
Are you sure of that, Natalia?
Ghost leaned in further, putting his face right in front of hers. His eyes burned into her, accusing. She was shaking and numb. She had never been sure. Hayden had always accepted Halya as his, and neither of them ever questioned it.
You've questioned it, Ghost said. When you look into her eyes, when you see me there, look at my face, and then look at hers.
Natalia did, her eyes going from Ghost to Halya. Halya smiled back at her, amused by the look on her mother's face because she didn't understand it. The fear, the pain, the guilt.
Do you mind if I hold her?
Ghost said, backing up beside the carriage.
You don't touch her, Natalia hissed. You don't ever touch her.
Ghost smiled.
Come now, Natalia, you don't think I would hurt her, do you?
He reached into the carriage, stroking the side of Halya's face. Halya laughed in response.
You aren't real,
Natalia said softly, trying to convince herself of what she already knew.
No? Then how does she feel my touch? Why is she laughing? Because she knows who her real daddy is.
No, Natalia cried.
Mom?
Natalia looked up past Ghost to the small light that appeared ahead of the stairs.
Ginny,
Natalia said.
Mom, were you waiting here for me?
Ginny started toward her, too far away to see anything clearly.
The power went out and I heard gunfire in the distance. I think there's trouble. We need to get out of here.
What?
Natalia whispered.
I came for the machine, Ghost said.
You want to use it?
Natalia replied.
To end the hunger? Mom, who are you talking to?
Ginny said.
No, Ghost said. I don't want the hunger to end. They're the most powerful weapon ever created. Too good to waste. I want them under my control.
Who are you?
I told Hayden to make the right choice. He didn't. This all could have been avoided.
Is someone there?
Ginny asked, getting closer. Natalia heard the action of a gun being prepared for use.
Ginny, stop,
Natalia said. She did.
What's going on?
You're very intelligent for a human. Except when it comes to your baser nature.
Ghost put his hand around Halya's face, squeezing it lightly.
Hayden denied me, and then he challenged me. This was your worst mistake.
He let go of Halya. That will be his.
Get the hell away from her,
Jenny said, moving closer, the light of her small flashlight joining with Natalia's calm. Halya started to cry. Natalia's breath caught in her throat. There really was someone there. It wasn't all a hallucination.
No, I don't think I will.
Shots boomed in the darkness, the muzzle flash of the gun revealing Ginny's tense face behind it. The rounds from the revolver hit Ghost in the side, blue flashes causing the projection to drop and the hallucination to fade. The Axon wasn't like the others she had seen. It was larger and more alien in form, its featureless head a larger, more elongated shape, its hands ending in three fingers instead of four, its limbs longer and leaner. It turned away from her, raising its hand toward Ginny, who kept shooting it until the revolver clicked empty.
No!
Natalia shouted as a blast of blue energy launched from the Axon and into Ginny's chest. She didn't even have time to scream before collapsing to the floor. Natalia lunged at the Axon, raking at its face with her nails. She couldn't damage its skin. It reached up and grabbed her wrist, bending it until it threatened to break and pushing her to her knees. The Axon lifted its other hand over her head, a blue light forming in its palm. A bright flash, and everything went black. If you enjoyed this audiobook, find more just like it from Podium Audio, the leader in sci-fi and fantasy audiobooks, available exclusively on audible.com. You have been listening to Invasion, Book 1 of Forgotten Vengeance, produced by Emily Durr, executive producer Greg Lawrence, written by M.R. Forbes, performed by R.C. Bray. Text copyright 2019 by M.R. Forbes. Production copyright 2020 by Podium Audio. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.